Scorpions Avenue.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
I actually thought this would be kind of fun, because I feel like we make fun of like what Alan is dressed like a lot, but we never talk about how Elliot and I are dressed. So I thought it would be just kind of nice to go around and tell the audience like what we're dressed as. So
sure.
I'll start with myself. I'm wearing gray jeans and like a hipster t-shirt. Elliot's wearing a sequin belly shirt. It's showing, I would say, all of his midriff and one nipple. It's a little cockeyed. It seems like he's had a bit of a rough day.
Oh, good. He wrote all this stuff down.
Because you can't look.
There are colored sequins on the shirt that spell out the word discreet, spelled with a Z.
Yeah.
He has, as per usual, his dream catcher belly button ring. He's wearing a pair of cut-off jean shorts, cut very, very close.
We can see the booty hole.
I would actually argue that they're closer to jean underwear, and one of his testicles is hanging out. He's also wearing an orange handkerchief in the top right pocket of his shirt, which is to symbolize he is scat curious. And as always, Alan is draped in a sheet.
I am.
So, all right. So now that the audience understands what we look like.
You missed my leopard print pants,
though. That's right. You do have nice leopard print pants. We could talk about an article that came out in pinknews.co.uk that I actually remain very skeptical about. But it's an article about how some people have suggested that Fred Phelps, who was the famous minister of the Westboro Baptist Church.
Your number one.
My favorite. I always thought he was the funniest. Famous for the God Hates Fags signs. Mm-hmm. He apparently had this exchange, according to almost no one who was quoted in the article, but this is all secondhand. But the article talks about how he had this exchange towards the end of his life in which he told a group of counter-protesters, which would have been gay people.
Yeah.
Because gay people counter-protested often the Westboro Baptist Church. He told them that they were, quote, good people.
It could have been the anti-war the anti-war protesters, though, as well. Because towards the end of his life, he often went to military funerals of straight people who died for fighting the fag country.
Well, Fred Phelps hated everything that was – this is – and to explain to the audience, I did a solo show about Fred Phelps many years ago. I listened to probably 50 of his sermons, which were at the time on his website.
Yeah.
I, along with Alan, was also featured on his website once as someone that God hates. But Fred Phelps, I will say, was very consistent in that he hated everything that represented this country.
Yes.
So – soldiers who protested, soldiers who died in the war in Iraq, civil rights pioneers.
What did he like?
Nothing, because he liked his family. He liked anyone who rejected the homosexual agenda, as he put it.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I think this article is so ridiculous, is because to me it sounds like a contrived story about a dream of what someone would want him to say.
Right.
And the reason I don't believe this is possible is because I don't like certain people sometimes, not because they're gay or they fought for this country, but just sometimes you just don't like someone. Mm-hmm. You have a falling out or whatever. Maybe you spend 3 years, 5 years hating this guy.
Us.
But then, you guys.
Yeah.
But then you change your mind, right? And you're like, you know what? We've outgrown this feud. Mm-hmm. I don't care about disliking this person anymore, but I don't think I've ever gone up to one of those people that I've previously had a nasty exchange with or genuine contempt for and said, you're a good person. I just kind of very slowly changed my behavior.
Yeah.
Because call it ridiculous, call it too much pride. I don't want to go up to someone and be like, I was wrong, you were right. We're great. You're a great person. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't believe he would do this.
Fred Phelps
I think if he did change
nuts.
His mind, I think if he had changed his mind, he wouldn't tell a gay person, you're good people. He would just stop going to protests.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if the person he told was gay.
They said he told counter protesters.
But they can be straight. Yeah.
He had a lot of people hated him towards. He was involved in a very massive Supreme Court case. He was hated by a lot of straight people too. So there were a lot of. It wasn't just gay people protesting.
Yeah, everyone hates Fred Phelps.
He was for a long time the counter protesters. No, he was niche in that. Because he only went to gay funerals and he only protested gay shit, that straight people were like, well, yeah, that's weird, but we don't care. But then as soon as the church started protesting military funerals, mm-hmm. that's when Republicans and Democrats and straight people started recognizing that this person is dangerous and or at least wrong.
Yeah.
And that's when they started to care. So they could have been a straight person he said it to, if he ever said it. I don't think he said it. I actually think like part of it is that when someone dies— good or bad, when someone dies, we like to oddly humanize them.
Yeah.
We want to make them, and we have all these little, like, fun little factoids. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why. I mean, I guess it's appropriate for Fred Phelps, but the person that comes to my mind right now is Hitler. Because we're so obsessed with sort of that crazy evil that people can be, we want to try to.
We talk about how he loved his dogs or whatever.
Or he was a vegetarian all of these things to humanize the person, because I don't think we can fathom hating something that much.
And that reminds me, because we do it to a much, much lesser degree than Hitler.
Yeah.
I've noticed liberals do that a lot with super conservative people. I've heard this for years. People, I've had friends say, Bill O'Reilly doesn't really believe what he says. Glenn Beck doesn't really believe what he says. Alex Jones doesn't really believe what he says. They're just, Ann Coulter, I've always heard that about Ann Coulter, because, you know, she famously goes to gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
In Manhattan, and everyone's like, oh, she doesn't actually believe. There are conservative people out there who say shitty, mean things that genuinely believe it and might still go to a gay bar or whatever.
Well, because they do it. I mean, and this then goes back to a really old political trick, and it's not just an American thing. It's a world thing. But people saying shocking things gets attention.
Yeah.
And if your ultimate goal is to get attention for whatever you're doing, you say shocking things so that people are captured. Trump is notorious for this. You know, as of this recording, Mueller is scheduled to testify before Congress. There's a reason why Trump is going on doing rallies where people are saying send her back. Because we're all talking about his racist way of encouraging people to say send her back and not potentially excited or knowing what's going on with Mueller and testifying in Congress. It's meant to distract. And we shock to distract often, especially politicians, but evil people too. And I think in some ways, like Fred Phelps, even though I do think he genuinely hated gay people.
Sure. That seems like a safe bet.
Yeah. I do think that a lot of his crazy speech was meant to get attention and was meant to get press.
But where would this story come from? I mean, I know the pinknews.co.uk isn't necessarily Pulitzer worthy, but where does a story like this generate?
I think people want it to be true. We want the great devil.
He was despicable, though.
Yeah, of course he was despicable. But I mean, it's also like he was meaningless. I obviously can't speak for people who were protested by him or more or less.
Yeah, those
soldiers,
funerals of the families.
Like,
I mean,
but he was so ridiculous. I always argued, and I said this actually in my show, that like I actually think crazy incendiary characters like Fred Phelps are good for a movement because they remind mm-hmm. normal people that there is more common ground than we think.
Yeah. Mm.
There are countless examples of Fred Phelps going to really conservative, tiny towns in the middle of Oklahoma to protest a kid who was elected to the school board, as class president. And he was gay.
Oh.
And the whole town would rally around the kid because they hated Fred Phelps so much.
Common enemy.
To me, I think that's way less dangerous than, say, a guy like an insidious homophobe like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Or Sarah Palin or some many Republicans of past.
Yeah.
Some Democrats.
My favorite person who people apologized for after he died was Chuck Berry. Because Chuck Berry died and people were like, he was the father of rock and roll. And it's like, yes, but remember, he also got busted for opening a line of restaurants where he put cameras in women's toilets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you could see them pee and poop.
Yeah, that was in St. Louis.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a great in the Loop in St. Louis. There's Blueberry Hill. I forget the name of it now.
They also found
it's Chuck Berry's place. He would play there even a lot.
Yeah,
I think actually Elliot would go there occasionally.
Yep, uh-huh. Yeah.
There's famous tape too that surfaced of him making a woman eat his ass and him farting on her.
Oh.
Wow, this is Elliot's really taking
really
a turn.
Really took a turn. Yeah.
I wasn't anticipating that.
Also another
I wonder if Fred Phelps ever did that.
Not even joking.
We're here with Dwayne Perkins. Hi.
Hello.
How are
you? I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for doing this.
Wanted to say for the episode that you two are graduates of the same college.
Yes. Yes.
I read it in the notes. But
I have to know, did you hate college with the vigor and vitriol that Alan hated college?
1,000%. I thought it was a waste of my time.
Yep. Really?
I asked my mother weekly, could I quit? And she was like, no, you're a gay black man in America. You can't. So I'm in debt for no reason.
Yeah. Mm. I hated every single fucking minute of college.
Really?
I just thought it was the worst time of my life.
Me too.
I love hearing Alan. He hated college.
I hated it. I thought it was a waste of time. It was a waste of money. I'm smart. I would have been smart without it. Like, I don't. It has given me nothing.
I support this 100%.
Yeah.
I have one friend from college. Like, everything about college, I feel like I could have just skipped it.
Yeah.
I did not need it.
Yeah. You guys did a testimonial for DePaul. They'd like crash and burn. We hated it. It was pointless.
No, I was just I get really angry about it because, like, you know, I'm not old by at all, but I'm 37, but it's like, I think I could have gotten a leg up in comedy a lot sooner if I wasn't wasting my time, you know.
Yeah, but what do you have to say when you're 19?
I have a lot to say. I could have been fucking doing internships at SNL. I could have been like moving to New York and doing shit. Like I could have been doing the shit that I really wanted to do other than feeling like I had to do this thing that everyone's telling me I have to finish.
Yeah.
Wow, you know? I relate to that so deeply.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
I did.
So did you come out before college or?
I came out the summer before college. Okay. So my freshman year was my first time being like an out homosexual man. And like moving to the north side, because I lived on the south side where I grew up, truly no one told me that everybody was white. And it was so shocking.
Lincoln Park area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you like never visited and shit?
No, like there was no reason for me to go to the north side. Yeah. So then when I went there for college, it was truly shocking. And my freshman year was terrible.
Yeah.
I just
did you live on the dorms?
Like
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was the only like black man in like the theater school that freshman year, and they were just like, you gotta play all the strong black men, and me being like, can I do something fun? Like, yeah, I don't want to be a sad father. Like, that's not who I am. But like the theater school was structured where they were like, well, all we got for you is August Wilson, so what you gonna do? And I was like, this is trash.
In Chicago?
I mean, you're thinking of Chicago as like, oh, it's a fun, accepting, loving city. But in a way, like Chicago, and it is, I love Chicago, but like Chicago's also very segregated.
It's the most segregated place I've ever been.
And like, it's, wow. and there's crazy. There's a massive disconnect of wealth between the north side, Lincoln Park, Lakeview, Gold Coast area, and then the south side. And it's just, it's shocking.
Yes, most people don't know, but like the structure of Chicago was built based on racism. Like the actual like structure. So like the
Mayor Daley in
the 60s. Expressways were created to create a barrier from the black people and the white people. And it's, you can just feel it in like the culture of the city. But because it's like a liberal city, people don't think that Chicago is the way that it is, but it's still like a Midwest city.
I was reading an article about how the African American community is starting to leave Chicago for first of all, Chicago is like one of the few big cities that is basically flat over the last like decade when it comes to population, which is very rare, unusual for a city that size. And a lot of people think it's because the African American community is moving out of the city.
Well, I kind of question that a little bit, only because
how dare you?
And
how dare you?
There's not many places for, I mean, in terms, because we live in this racist country, there's not many places within that area for African Americans to go to get work.
I would agree with you, but I would change the verb move to being forced out.
Yes, that's a good
gentrification.
Okay.
Like, a lot of my family, like the Cabrini Green area where like Second City is. When I grew up, that area was just like all black. It wasn't the best area. I mean, Candyman was filmed there, and it was truly just like the movie, terrifying. and now it's just like all affluent white people in condos. It's crazy how the actual like look of Chicago has changed. And I'm not that old, so like to see the change so rapidly within my time growing up, I can't imagine what it will be in 10 years.
Wait, so did you do comedy? You were doing theater in college. And then how did you get into, because you do stand up and you're also a writer.
Yeah, I, what did I do? So once I got cut from the theater program.
Yeah, what happened? How does that happen?
Oh, it's a conservatory.
Yeah, so it's a conservatory where they bring in like 40 something people, and then by sophomore year they only keep 22.
Oh wow! So they just like cut. I didn't know that.
Where are you supposed to go? Just find something else?
They just kick you out of the major.
Oh wow!
And you moved to a new major,
animation.
I auditioned for Tisch School of the Arts and at NYU, and I got in, but because I'm poor, I couldn't afford to go. So I was like, oh, well, at least I have my confidence back. And then I switched my major, and then I started working at Second City. And then Second City is like the path that led me to where I am now.
And you were on Wildin' Out.
Yeah.
What is Wildin' Out?
It's a... improv show on MTV that Nick Cannon created.
Yeah.
And it was like very different than the UCB improv scene, we could say.
And it changed over, like when it first started, when I watched it when I was younger, it actually had like improvisers on it.
Yes, yes, I remember that.
This current...
It became more sketch, right?
It's right now it's a lot of like influencers.
Okay. Fun.
Doing improv?
Yeah. It's
not what it was.
No. But yeah, I was on that show like right after Second City. So Second City was like insane white people. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Wild 'N Out where it's a bunch of black people. And then I went there and I was like, oh, everybody's homophobic. Yeah. Oh, no, I can't win.
Were you out?
That season was the first time that they were trying gays because that's what they said out loud.
No.
And it was me and this other guy, and we were like, oh, we're the two gays. And by the end of the season, he had a breakdown, and I was just like,
oh, brother.
Ooh, boy, this is like, it was.
So even amongst like cast members?
Yeah. I mean, because now the show is really surrounded around like hip hop. There's a lot of like freestyling, and just like the culture of hip hop feels inherently homophobic at times. And so like there was just like the environment, though people were very nice, it was just, you can tell that they do not interact with gay people.
Right.
Yeah. When was the last time you felt that? You've been in an environment or situation, because I think L.A. entertainment, you're always around people who know a million gay people. When was the last time you were around a group of people where you're like, they don't get this, they don't understand?
I mean,
it's been so long. For me.
I feel it more often. I think because of the way I dress and present myself. So I think a lot of times in certain situations, I feel uncomfortable because I am not dressing or looking like maybe the way you do, like going to even just Target and stuff, people can look sometimes if you
son of a bitch.
You know what I mean though? Like you get profiled way.
Of course,
and
of course.
So like I think it's kind of different for everyone.
Yeah, I get that.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky, I guess.
Yeah.
Privilege.
Was that really awful?
I think just like the life that I led, it was just one of those situations of being like, oh, well, this sucks, but also it forced me to create certain like walls to where now that I'm where I am now, not many things could like shake me.
Yes, that's
I'm
great.
Just like,
and it
whatever.
Probably influenced your comedy and made it better.
Because I'm trying to like say this in like a graceful way.
Yeah.
I'm never going to escape people like that. So it was just nice to be like, oh, this is how I have to be around these people.
Yeah.
Like it was, I think around the second week, there was a moment where we were having like a truth circle because the showrunner said that like the morale was low. Mm-hmm. And we were just like going in a circle talking about like who we were. And when it got to me, the guy next to me like jumped at me like physically.
What?
And I just like looked at him and then I was like, okay, we gotta have a talk. And I just like told the like group, like, hey, this is where I'm from, this is what I'm about. I know that like this is like a very like the atmosphere of this place is like we're like teasing each other, but the way that you guys are teasing is just bullying, because the only thing you're talking about is me being gay, and I don't like being bullied. I got bullied when I was younger. I got arrested because I tried to kill a bully. I don't like this. I'll kill all of you. And then they laughed, and then I was like, I am dead ass serious. And then from that moment on, they like showed me respect. Yeah. And the other guy didn't do that, so they were just like shitty to him the whole time.
Yeah.
Just because they didn't realize that like the dynamic that they were creating was not the same. Mm-hmm. Like them talking to their friend being like, oh, your shoes are ugly, is very different from being like, you say some gay shit, and me being like, that, no, yeah, don't
right,
say that.
Right,
like,
yeah.
This is insane. So it was just a lot of me having to keep asserting like who mm-hmm. I was and being like, I don't like that, don't say that. It forced me to like stand up for myself in ways I
yeah.
hadn't since like high school.
Right.
So yeah. it was just like, it was at first triggering, and then I was like, oh, I know, okay, I just have to like shut this shit down.
That's crazy, because you're not in school, you're around adults.
Yeah. It's a job,
in a working environment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the producers were like, one of the guests for that season that I was on was Todrick Hall, and he was a guest, and he came into the green room, and no joke, a producer like took him, and the very first thing he said is, we have gays this season, and then he just brought him to me and then left. Oh, and I was like, hi, I'm sorry, this is, what is, like, it was just,
wow,
it was just like a crazy experience, but like there were like good parts to it that was just like heavily overshadowed by me mm-hmm. being like, I gotta leave, this is crazy.
Yeah.
y'all but, are, I mean, nuts.
On some level, like having experiences like that and facing situations like that, it seems like the best kind of preparation to do something like Michelle Wolf's White House Correspondents' Dinner and help with that, because like her whole performance was taking people to task, you know, standing up and saying enough of this bullshit and like laying it out, and you being a part of that, I think, was probably a big
did that impact, because you wrote for her show and the Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
Was that as, I don't know if bombastic is the term, but was it as insane as it appeared to be, you know, in the whole like
because that was
the days
was,
that followed.
The press response was that it was a controversy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. What was interesting about that was the first time that I've ever been in a situation where I was like able to write for something, but it wasn't my voice. Mm-hmm. So to like write a joke that she said and then be like, oh, she's getting so much flack for this, and me being like, I'm not being touched by this at all, mm-hmm. was like such a weird feeling, because I was like, I wish we could like help share this burden with you, but also. Yeah. We can't, like, that's not what this is.
Yeah.
But there was like such a separation, because like when you're like in an office writing jokes, you're just like writing jokes. And mm-hmm. then like when we got to watch her do it and we're sitting in the room, it was disgusting. Like, it was such a bad feeling of just like being in that space and like seeing the people you see on TV like argue and be like, we hate each other, kikiing, taking pictures. It was just like such, it felt like the Hunger Games. Like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't think I belong. I shouldn't be seeing this. Like, this is weird. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it felt really gross. And then when she did it, and you could hear people being like, oh my God, she's brutal, we were like, yes, fuck them! It, like, that was like a great feeling. And she was the very last thing of the whole dinner. And so like, she did her like speech, and then it was over.
Yeah.
And it was like such a feeling of being like, oh, they're so mad. They're so, and like, we were all just like so happy.
Of course.
That they were mad.
Yeah.
So that part was great. But like, everything leading up to it was just like, this is such a weird feeling to be in this space with these people.
I can't imagine being in that room that night.
That, it's so interesting you say that, because I have this, it reminded me weirdly of, as a political nerd, I remember years ago, it might've been Obama's first State of the Union, before Michelle Bachmann, who was a very conservative Minnesota state House representative who ran for president, became kind of famous. But I knew her, and I will never forget, towards the tail end of the coverage, as Obama's leaving the building, she runs up to him and takes a selfie with him.
Ew.
And it was so weird to be
transparent.
Like, I was like, that's Michelle Bachmann. Like, she was already controversial, but only for like political nerds by that point. And I was like, why would Michelle Bachmann want a picture with Barack Obama? I mean, but yeah, sometimes when you see all these people together, they're all just a bunch of rich folks.
Yeah.
Want to hang out and be friends, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
Remember, yeah, I also remember specifically that people were so mad over the joke that compared Sarah Huckabee Sanders to Aunt Lydia from The Handmaid's Tale.
I mean, that was so brilliant.
It was so funny, and there were so – I remember the and you can probably clarify this, but there were so many – there were people saying, oh, it's a slight on what she looks like. And – to me, it felt like it was very clear that it was like, no, we're talking about like,
yeah, like, characteristics.
Well, right.
I thought it was obvious, but like when these arguments come up, and I'm learning this like as I do more and just like interact with more people, you just can't argue with people who are dumb.
Yeah.
I think the right is doing a great job of weaponizing sort of PC culture on the left, and. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes there's a consistency to it. I'm not saying that's the instance, but sometimes they're like, this is offensive because of X, Y, and Z. And you read it and you're like, yeah, we say the same thing on our side. So it only makes sense to be, I guess, fair.
But it's not fair because the joke is inherently about Ann Dowd's, like, terrifying character, not about what she looked like.
Right.
I love Ann Dowd.
I love Ann Dowd.
I mean, she's just so cool.
Have you guys ever seen the clip of Ann Dowd accepting whatever award she won?
The Emmy?
The Emmy, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And for the Americans?
Whatever award.
It was for The Handmaid's Tale.
Was it?
Award.
I thought it was for The Americans.
No, The Handmaid's Tale. Whatever. But anyway, she thanks the network that Handmaid's Tale is on, and which is Hulu. And Ann Dowd pronounces it, she is the most actor-y actor I've ever seen. She says, like, I want to thank Hulu. She says, like, Hulu.
And Hulu, and they're very lovely, Hulu.
And I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. Hulu. It was like, where are you from? She's from, like, Massachusetts.
Elliot always loved whenever someone said, Soho.
Soho.
You loved it whenever someone didn't say Soho. They said Soho.
Or Broadway. My dad says Broadway.
I mean, anything Broadway. B. Arthur saying anything. Yeah, program. Right.
No, she says program, and she says process.
Every, like, black old lady I know say theater. And I'm like, I'm obsessed. Yes, theater.
Theater.
Also, auntie, I've only said aunt, and now I know people who say aunt all the time, and it always throws me.
Oh. I say aunt.
Aunt. I say aunt. Aunt. Aunt's very Midwest, though.
I would never say auntie. I would say auntie, but...
I would never say auntie.
Yeah.
I don't have enough money to say auntie.
Well.
I say auntie.
So after you're doing Wild and Out, when did you find your way into stand-up?
How did I do stand-up? Oh, I started stand-up because I did a show in D.C. with Second City that was half stand-up, half sketch. And I remember, this is going to reveal a lot about myself. People would come to see the show, and after they'd see it, they would tell the stand-ups, like, oh, love your set, great writing. And then they would come to me and be like, what a great actor. And I'd be like, I wrote this whole show. What are you talking about? How dare you? So then I was like, oh... Stand-up looks easy. And then I started doing stand-up, and that was it.
That's it.
It was truly just a friend of mine was like, oh, you have the skills to do this, so you should do it. And then I did it the first time, and I was like, oh, I'm amazing. And then I just kept doing it.
That was kind of why I got so frustrated with the theater school at DePaul was because I was doing all these acting things, and like I was even doing improv and stuff, and like just got so frustrated working with people and other people getting credit for shit that I was doing. And it just got really upsetting that I was just like, I'm way better than all of this. I just got to do me. And like,
it's kind of crazy that the actors get way more credit than writers.
Yes, it's crazy.
Certainly, it's a talent and everything, but like, and writing is the hard part.
This is an interesting question for everybody here, basically. Oh, but like,
I'll be the judge of that.
Dating in comedy. As a gay person, I'll just say that.
Yeah, I never dated.
I've never dated another comedian, and I feel
gave
like...
a pity blowjob to a comedian once.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sweet.
You're a good person.
I'll tell you later. Yeah.
No, I would say comedy. I love comedy as an art form, but I think that the cultures of comedy are pretty toxic, and I don't necessarily want that in a relationship.
Like, right, right.
So I also have never dated a comic.
Yeah, I think
I just
it doesn't
really
happen.
Yeah. Like a normal person that just does not have feelings attached to if they're funny or not.
Correct.
I don't want to be upstaged at a party.
Yeah.
I don't want to go with someone and have them be infinitely more charming than me.
I think there is something with, I mean, you know, my boyfriend Michael does not do any performing whatsoever. He hates it. But he also hates, like, podcast interview, anything like that, he hates. And I mean, I'm better at that. But, like, I think in some weird level, like, if I was dating a comedian, there would be a competitive thing going on. Whereas with Michael, like, he can criticize my comedy, my art, whatever I'm doing, and it doesn't feel as intense as it would from a comedian.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Brent once discovered in an ex-boyfriend of mine, I didn't know this, that you heard, remember you? He said that he was disappointed because he wasn't famous or something?
Yeah, one of your ex, your primary ex-boyfriend who wasn't in any field really related to entertainment, or certainly not in a job that would have led to entertainment, said that he realized at like the age of 29 that he wasn't going to be famous, and he finally came to terms with that.
And that blew my mind because I was like,
"Cause you're
excuse
like,
me?
He never brought up
weirded
like
me out.
Fame or entertainment or anything.
Fame is such a weird thing that I feel like right now is just like such like on the pulse. Like everybody wants to be famous, but nobody really is really deciding what they want to be famous for.
Right,
they're
exactly.
just like, just know me. I'm like, that's crazy.
There was like a poll even recently that I remember them talking about that kids now, the percentage of kids who think they're going to be famous is wildly high.
Yeah.
Wait. Do they compare it to previous generations? Because all kids think they're going to be famous.
Oh, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I don't think all kids do. I know my
certainly
siblings
being a little
didn't.
Facetious,
I
surely losers.
Did not. Yeah. I did not think that it was a possibility. I really thought that like famous people were like handpicked by like some special person, just being like,
sure.
Famous people are famous because they're special.
Yes.
And then when I realized like, oh, you just gotta like do certain things.
No, you know,
I was like, oh,
when you walk into an elementary school, all you see are signs everywhere telling everyone how amazing and special they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it comes from.
Yes.
You're indoctrinated in a good way. It's good, but you're indoctrinated to believe that you are the best.
I think
you
that's one of
amazing.
The reasons.
Not baby boomers.
I mean,
but
why they're getting rid of like the like numbers on Instagram and stuff.
Right. Oh, are they?
Yeah, they are.
I did think I was the best, but not necessarily in that field. Like,
yeah.
Like I was raised to be the best, like intellectually. Like I
do you
was
have
like,
siblings,
oh,
by the way?
I have four sisters.
Okay.
And I'm the only boy. So from a young age, my mother always was like, if you are going to get out of the hood, you have to be as smart as possible. Mm-hmm. So it was never like creative. It was like math and science. Until college, I really thought I was going to be a mathematician.
Oh.
Like in high school, I went to a performing arts school, and my friends were like, their majors were like music.
You were fame.
Music and theater. My major was physics because I was like, I want a double period of AP physics.
Oh my God.
I went to summer school in high school voluntarily so I can take AP calculus because I was like, well, you need 5 years of math to be able to take this class. So I was like, guess I'm going to go to summer school for fun.
Wow. What fun.
It's funny.
And now I'm like, I refuse to count.
Wait,
I think the mark of a comedian is feeling like you're smarter than everybody else.
Oh, that's why I took the SAT again recently because I thought I was going to do.
That's why office
I thought I was going to do so much better. I took the SAT recently. Alan bailed.
I was busy.
Because I was like, it's been what, 14 years since I took it last. I just want to see how I can do. And I did a little better, but not much. And it was
it's the math.
Unbelievably
SAT is
disappointing.
So math heavy.
The
you
math
take
I didn't
the
even
ACT.
Count because the math was, I didn't remember any of them.
I don't do math.
Do you remember your SATs? You must.
I remember the ACT.
Yeah,
in the Midwest
I never
we had to do
the
ACT.
Yeah, we didn't take the
SAT.
What? Yeah. What did you say?
We didn't take the SAT.
Yeah, ACT is like Midwest.
If you stay in the Midwest, if like I'm from Missouri originally, and like if you're going to a Midwestern school, they don't require the SAT really.
I'm so jealous. Yeah,
take the ACT
people.
And see if you have well
I
you
did.
Do there.
What is it like 20s? In the 20s you win?
Yes.
You win?
Yes, Elliot. Yes. Let's leave it at that. If it's in the 20s, you win.
Isn't the score like
no, he's right though.
20s to 36.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so upset because I got a 32. I was so mad because I was like, I should have got a 36.
I don't remember what I got. I think I got a 31, but I don't remember.
I think I got a 35, 36. Wow. I think I got 36.
He's lying.
36. Wait, perfect score. Do you think that? Would you say that you're gifted?
In what way?
No, like were you a gifted kid? Like were
oh,
you
yes.
considered
like,
gifted?
They like told me this. Like I was like a certified like speed reader. I had like
yes.
Oh, you were like that guy. Remember that guy who did the infomercials who would like speed read with those books?
Sorry. That was you.
Like yeah, like and then in high school. So like the way that I basically because I was like smart, the way that my schooling went is all of my teachers would basically separate like the not smart kids and the smart kids and be like, these are the kids that are going to save all of us.
Right. Sure. So, right.
So they just really like beat it into me that like I was
you're
like meant for greatness.
Yes.
And then in my high school, I was in this program called the IB program, International Baccalaureate program. And in the history of my school, no like black male student ever got it until me. And so like my picture's on the wall.
You're
so
right.
I was like, guys, I'm great. Because everyone has told me I'm
you
great.
Did it.
And then I went to college and I was like, oh man, systemic oppression. Because like when I was in elementary school, I was like trying to get like perfect scores on like these standardized tests. And then when I went to high school, I got my very first F. And I was like, this is unacceptable.
No.
My freshman year, I got straight C's and an F simply because, like, the school that I went to, I was the smartest person at that school.
Right.
But it was a very systemically oppressed school. Like, we didn't have science as a subject.
Oh.
Because we couldn't afford books.
Yeah.
So when I went to high school, and I had, like, all these honors classes, I had honors biology, and I went into that class being like, I don't know what any of this is.
Right.
So I had to like catch up with myself.
Yeah.
So by my senior year of high school, I was great again. But like when I went into high school,
I was like,
Jesus Christ, this is hard. Like no one told me. So like every like level of schooling, it was just like a punch to my face because I didn't realize that what I knew was not correct. So when I went to high school, I was like, wow, I was not as smart as these other kids. And when I went to college, I was like, fuck, I wasn't prepared for this either.
Right.
So it was just like a lot of me being like, wow, no, everyone's lying to me.
That's true. Before
so
you go,
hard.
I just have to ask. Okay, so the guys know that something I love to watch. I love watching dancing videos.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, boy.
And you're so good at dancing.
Here we go.
Thanks.
But is that like a new hobby or...
No, I actually...
No, he posts these dancing videos that are incredible.
I would love for you of like, 2019 is going to be the year of me dancing. That's my new hobby.
I love to watch people dance. I love it. And you're so good at it.
I was a professional dancer for a while. And I had to like... There was a period in my life when I was working at Second City and also in a dance company. And I had to pick between the two because I was like, I don't have time to do both.
Right.
And I picked comedy because I was like, well.
You make money.
Yeah, you make more money. Yeah. And I can still like dance within the things that I create. And also dancing's
dance
hard.
At home?
Like,
dancing's
you can dance in the bathroom.
Can you teach me
no,
how to dance?
No, not the way he dances. He's really good.
Oh, thanks. I just remember like one of my last auditions was for the Paris Opera Ballet. And the first part of the audition was just them being like, take off your shirts. And then they walked down a line and then they were like, no.
What are they
no.
looking at with like, your shirts off?
Just like your body type. Like just like your muscle structure. And it was just all like, it had nothing. Like we had not danced at all. And
so it's not like you're hot, you're not hot.
Whoa.
It's just like we want a certain look for this. And I was like, I don't have the time to be doing this.
Yeah,
like,
right.
This is too much.
You're like, guys, I'm a genius, so.
I'm gifted.
32 on the ACT. That's crazy.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people follow you on the interwebs?
Excuse me?
On the internet. Where can people follow you?
Excuse me?
You can follow me on Twitter at Dwayne Perkins. That's D-E-W-A-Y-N-E Perkins, because people always spell my name wrong because there's an E.
Like the restaurant, Perkins.
Yeah, and then on Instagram at Dwayne K. Perkins. Perfect.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks,
thank
Dwayne.
You.
And another thing.
Years ago, I was part of a Fire Island share, a timeshare.
Right.
This isn't going to be good.
Yeah. This isn't starting off right.
I was part of a Fire Island
timeshare. Yeah, you dated a guy who was really, his group of friends really liked going to Fire Island.
Yeah, and he wore a no shirt under a really deep V-neck sweater.
Which I don't remember, but I
or
believe
cardigan, friends. Right? Cardigan, right?
Cardigan, yeah. Cardigan.
Anyway.
Sexy.
He and his friends were very, I would say, they were. I would always say they were good at being gay. In the sense that they were able to, like, know about restaurants and clubs and stuff in the city, whereas I felt very scrappy and was just like doing my thing and with you guys, like just kind of doing comedy and stuff. But whatever, I love
farting
that.
Around town.
Yeah, farting around town. Yeah.
I don't fart.
Passing around town. Passing gas around
passing
town.
Passing gas around town.
But anyway, so I was part of this Fire Island share. So we'd go 3 weeks out of the 3 or 4 weeks out of the summer.
Yeah.
House was a dump.
Right.
But it was, you know, everyone was sort of like acting like they were rich. I was like, okay. But anyway, so you go to we go to Fire Island. It wasn't my favorite, you know. Everybody
it was pricey too at the time, right?
Yeah,
it's
it
still
was.
Pricey.
How much? Yeah, right. Well, how much was it?
I don't remember. But it was
people save.
I remember
up
you.
For
had,
it,
I was gonna say. I remember at the time you had to like, you had to make the decision to join your boyfriend because it was so expensive.
Yes,
expensive
yes.
enough.
Yeah, yeah, and
we're talking like thousands.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
for the summer.
That is too much for the whole summer.
Yeah. I had book deal money, thank you very much. But anyway, nevertheless, we went, and so it was you know the summer of it all everything that in Fire Island is just what goes on there. It's parties and the things, and I just was never really interested in that stuff.
Yeah.
So I would chill by the pool. I was the only one that brought my dog. I was the only one that brought books.
Sure.
And I was like, why don't people just want to like chill out, you know?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, like. That was what they did. That's like what they wanted to do, and they would go to see drag shows at different bars and stuff like that. So okay, cool. So then, at the end of the summer, there's this annual thing that this like famous party promoter Daniel Nardiccio he throws
Playgirl guy, right?
That's right. He was like, the editor of Playgirl briefly online or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, he throws this annual thing that I. For some reason, and it's like, I don't know why I believe this, but I guess I thought it was either like a joke or it was like stuff of lore, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it turns out it's a very real thing called the underwear party,
okay.
Where on Fire Island, you everybody goes to this party and you get in for free if you go in your underwear.
What's different from like a swimsuit?
I don't know.
It's Fire Island.
Yeah,
it's
beach. I wouldn't say that's too crazy. I mean, that doesn't strike me as too crazy.
Well, then my question is, if you were in that scenario, would you pay the $20 or would you go in your underwear?
Well, we know the answer to this question for me, which is I don't take my shirt off in public, so I would pay the $20.
Right.
I would find a creative way to go in underwear while making it a Diane Keaton-inspired full-body suit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably like a Mormon underwear situation.
Actually, didn't she wear like some weird black bodysuit as a swimming suit once? You
maybe.
Could like wear that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See? So I would find a way to make it funny and creative and plead my case that it is actually underwear.
So
the bouncer would be like, fuck off, faggot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did neither. I didn't pay the money to go, and I also didn't go. I was the only one in the house to not go. And I was surprised.
Did all of the people in the house go in their underwear?
Uh-huh.
Mm. Yeah.
Including my boyfriend, which kind of, kind of surprised me. But then also including friends of friends who were visiting who I never would have thought
they're the kind of people that would go to a party in their underwear.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you go in your underwear?
Because I thought it was silly. Mm. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm...
But would you go to... I mean, just play devil's advocate. Would you go... Like, let's say it's a
pool party.
A pool party. Would you go in a swimsuit?
Yes.
How is that different than underwear?
You're only just showing off a little bit more leg.
Yeah. And knowing his swimsuit...
Jesus.
I don't know. I don't really know what the difference is.
Because there really is no difference.
I guess you're right. I think inherently something about it just felt so goofy.
Yeah.
And anyway, my question being to you guys, like, do you think I was overreacting by being the only one not to go because it felt goofy? Or do you think I should have just, like, chilled out and...
I think you did the right thing, which is to stay in your comfort zone. That's fine.
Yeah.
I would have been very uncomfortable.
I have the same response, which is I wouldn't have done it, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think Alan makes a great point. It's literally just a pool party, but instead of slightly longer trunks, you're wearing underwear. So I think...
I mean, people probably went in, like, jock straps and stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I've seen the pictures. Yeah. It's sure. not like a pool party.
And also, let's be honest, you probably would have been part of the 10% that didn't wear their underwear.
Yeah.
So I think you would have felt probably more awkward not wearing your underwear than wearing your underwear.
And is there something to the idea of not wanting to see all of your friends, in under... Like, I don't...
Well, okay, let's back it up.
Yeah.
Like... these people weren't your friends.
They They were friends. They were my friends. They weren't lifelong friends. No, but they were my friends.
But they were people you also judged. Let's be real.
No. They were. I know what you mean, but no, they were my friends, and I knew we were different.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, but I didn't let it get in the way of being friends with them.
But seeing them in a sort of pseudo sexual light made you uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, but yet it. I mean, them seeing you in that light didn't make them uncomfortable.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it wouldn't.
Yeah, sure.
But you didn't go. I agree with Brent. I think you made the right decision by doing whatever you felt most comfortable doing. But
I just
think
felt like a prude.
Yeah, and I think it says more about your own anxieties around sex and gay culture
totally.
Than it does about you not wanting to see your friends in a sexual light. You have no problem seeing your friends in a sexual light.
No.
You've seen my dick many a times.
Sure.
And not by choice, but forced. And I don't think I do think there probably was a little bit of, I don't understand this part of gay life, and thus it makes me uncomfortable.
Yes.
And
by the way,
you probably felt it maybe even a little bit guilty about not going because
for sure.
all of your friends and your boyfriend went, and that's a shitty feeling.
Of course.
Although
I would say I would go now.
Yeah.
I feel...
And really? what do you think's changed between then and now?
I understand where my shame comes from, and I understand that, like, how oppressive shame is for all gay guys, and how mine is not necessarily any different. I just sort of wear it in a different way.
Yeah, and not letting shame and our own anxieties dictate decisions that potentially could keep us from growing and doing different things that might be good for us. I mean, you know, you're a responsible adult. You're not going to go there and like
do a bunch of Molly and
fuck a dude in a corner. And if you did that, that wouldn't be bad either. But like, you know, you're not going to do that. You're a responsible adult.
Right.
Yeah. And so you have the capabilities to have anxiety over things, sure, but to not let that anxiety stop you from experiencing things.
Yeah.
And this, even though it's something that I probably, it's not a party I would plan.
Yeah.
You know? But it's also one of those
or
parties.
Is it?
it's probably not. But it's one of those parties, because I would make you come like in heels. You would have to come in kitten heels.
I thought you said come. I thought you just said I would make you come. I'm like, Jesus, Alan.
No. No.
I was like, wow, that is the most sexually aggressive thing.
I would make you come in kitten heels.
No, yeah, I'd make you come in like early 20s bathing suit, like full body bathing suit.
Oh my God,
suits.
I would love it.
That would
no,
be
but
really
I do
funny.
Think, I think, you know, it's, you, there is something, I mean, and a lot of our text chains and stuff, like we had a thing the other day where we were talking about potential subjects and stuff, and you know, you guys were talking about something that makes you uncomfortable, and I like cattily responded like, y'all have issues.
You did. I was surprised by
that. Because you
a little hurt.
You get lost in, I think sometimes, your own anxieties about gay culture and guilt within gay culture that allowing, I don't know, not to evolve, but to have a conversation that is more broad and not make it personal to you, you know, and let that stop you from experiencing things. I just hate,
totally.
I hate any shame or anxiety stopping people from living in a really interesting way. You're not going to go do something.
You're not going to go
do something that's going to hurt yourself or hurt anyone else because you're responsible. So why not do something that maybe you're a little bit interested in?
I just had a flash that I completely forgot about until right now.
You're welcome.
Of this one guy who came for the weekend to that share, and I did not like him.
You didn't like a lot of the guys that came for. They stayed for free.
Yeah. Or they tried to stay for free.
See, now that would piss me off.
Well, right.
But he came and he was, really obnoxious. Like, went out of his way to be obnoxious. And he, I don't even know if he was drunk at this point, but he was, like, sitting around the pool in, like, a robe. And then literally, like, we hadn't even, like, exchanged names yet. And he literally opened the robe and, like, flashed his butthole. And I was like, oh, God.
That's so ridiculous.
So ridiculous. He was like, he was running, like,
was
literally.
He just doing it to you, or was it to other people?
To
or?
Everybody. But we hadn't, I didn't even know the guy's name.
That is, that is
well,
so
needless
funny.
To say, later that summer, he came back when he wasn't invited. He came to the house when he wasn't invited. He wasn't even supposed to be there. And he came and tried to jokingly stay there. And we got into a screaming match.
Did he leave?
He did leave, but we had to, like, it was me and another friend, and we had to really scream him out of the house. He was like, "Where am I going to stay?" And it was like, "I don't know. You're the worst."
Yeah,
yeah. It's not our responsibility.
He's like, "I shouldn't have flashed you my butthole. You didn't earn it."
Oy. Fire Island sucks.
What would your aunt say? Brent, what would Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
I still remember you wearing your t-shirt in the pool in fifth grade.
My Aunt Joanne would say, you should show Dwayne how you dance. What would Aunt Anne say?
My Aunt Anne would say, where is this Fire Island and why hasn't anyone put out the fire?
Your aunt's a dummy.
She is.
She's a dumb.
Thank you for listening. I'm Elliot Glazer.
Thanks for listening, guys. I'm Elliot Glazer.
Thanks. I'm Elliot Glazer. Thanks for listening. I'm unhinged.
Star Bands Audio, a podcast network.